Location, the lab. Quentin only has 24 hours to sell his car. Is that even possible? He goes to Carvana.com.
What is this, a movie trailer?
He ignores the doubters, enters his license plate. Wow, that's a great offer. The car is sold, but will Carvana pick it up in time for...
They'll literally pick it up tomorrow morning. Done with the dramatics?
Car selling in record time.
Save your time. Go to Carvana.com and sell your car today. Pickup fees may apply.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Tim Dillon Show. Another atmospheric rain event here in Los Angeles, a storm. Cleansing the air of the fire, which is nice. Cleansing the air of the hellish fire should be a 48-hour strongest storm in a year bearing down on Southern California could cause flooding. The terms now for these are always, the most extreme. They're like atmospheric, sky storm. It's never like it's going to rain for 2 days. When I grew up, it was like it's raining. And now it's like an atmospheric, river or something they call it. Like a, what is the term for this? It's like a river of raging, even the way they write about it, they're like raging torrents of rain and atmospheric river, they call it. What happened to rain? Like it's going to rain a lot. Now it's an atmospheric river. Raging torrents of rock slides and mudslides that can be damaging and even deadly. Yeah, well, that's not ideal, but it doesn't help to call it an atmospheric river. It's like a river is falling out of the sky onto whatever. That's why I sold my house, obviously. Many people don't listen to the show. They listen, but they don't listen. So they come up to me and they go, did your house really burn down? I go, well, it's pretty clear if you listen to the words. Now, I did keep hammering it, going, my house burned down. But there was a disclaimer early on when I said, I sold the house. And I did. I sold it last year because of the atmospheric river and torrents of raging atmospheric rain, river in the sky. The storm is arriving through an atmospheric river. Atmospheric river storms are long plumes of water vapor that can pour over from the Pacific Ocean into California. They carry so much water that they're said to be like a river in the sky. Just a few atmospheric river events can bring California from one-third to one-half of its annual precipitation. What's nice about this, though, is we've had more rain than we've ever had, and we still don't have any water to fight fires. So that's good that we have more water, and yet none of it when it's needed because we don't have a way to trap it and keep it or whatever. But that's why I sold my home, because my home was on a cliff. I had a beautiful house. It overlooked the valley, really. I mean, my view was towards the valley, but I looked at some of the hills in Beverly Hills, and it was pretty. But, the California mountains aren't like Colorado. This isn't, a mountain. This isn't limestone. This is dirt. The hills of California are packed dirt that with enough rain, they all, there's mudslides. There are rock slides and people, Mulholland Drive, which is the road that you took to get one of the roads you took to get to my house. A boulder slid down and they destroyed Mulholland Drive and they closed it. And it took months and months and months to get the road back to where you can travel on it. And I didn't love that. I didn't like the idea of that. Again, I think it's, this is, when you experience climate, you have to decide what is and isn't your home. This is real. This is true. When you experience significant events that are out of your control, fires, floods, hurricanes, you have to decide how much you love a specific part of this country. How much you're willing to sacrifice for it. Are you okay with having a home on the west coast of Florida if it happens to be destroyed? Can you bounce back? Is that, no, you should think about this. Truly. Are you able to deal with the ramifications of an event like a Category 4 hurricane if you are living on the west coast of Florida? Can you deal with the fire in parts of the west coast? Or are you going to make a different choice? What is your home? Are you willing to die for your home, in your home? Literally, are you willing to die in your home? Are you willing to save people in your home? Are you going to run around saving other people in the home? I don't mean your home. I mean your neighborhood, your town. How deep are you in? Are you rooted? Do you care? Are you willing to help the neighbors? Do you love the neighbors? Do you love it? Are you fighting for it? These are all real questions. They are. You have to decide where you want to, what, where your patch of dirt happens to be. Is it worth it? After we've had a wild year of fires and hurricanes and floods, and I'm not saying you can predict this. I'm also not saying you always have a choice. Your kids are in the school. Your job is there. I get it. I'm not an idiot. I know that sometimes you just have to deal with it. But there are people that are maybe younger or they have the ability to think about these things before they buy a home, before they plant roots in an area. What are you willing to deal with? It's a trade-off. For sure, it's a trade-off. You know, I don't know Elon Musk. I met Elon Musk one time at a New Year's party a few years ago in Austin. He was very gracious. He was very nice to me. A few of my friends were at that party. We spoke it was a minimal amount of interaction that we had. He's an awkward guy. He's clearly on the spectrum. He clearly wants to be cool. He clearly wants to be liked. He has some brilliant thoughts in his head, and he's got other thoughts. He has some thoughts that have a lot of value, and I'm sure there are thoughts that do not. He is quickly becoming the most famous person in the world. I don't love this photo of Trump sitting there and Elon Musk standing over him in kind of an ominous way, you know, kind of wearing all black. I don't love that. And I'm not even suggesting that Trump is in somehow like, you know, in debt to Elon or being cucked by him in any way. I'm just saying the photo itself, I don't love. Now, obviously, Elon spent a lot of money to get Trump elected, and Elon put a lot of effort and energy into that election. And Elon's now working, I believe, as a special advisor, whatever the term is, with this Department of Government Efficiency. And he's going around and he is trying to purge the government of a lot of the, some of the government employees. He's trying to identify and isolate cases of corruption, waste, abuse, and, you know, he's not wrong to be doing this. This is something that Trump wants him to do. The aesthetics of it aren't ideal. Trump doesn't look like he's in control. Now, I'm not suggesting he's not. This is just the appearance of it. And appearances are, in many cases, reality. There are enough reality for people to form opinions. So I think having a press conference in the Oval Office where Elon Musk is standing over Donald Trump dressed in all black, speaking more than Donald Trump, isn't great. I've predicted this relationship at some point was going to become difficult. I think that's starting. I'm not even saying that the U.S. aid program has an intrinsic value. I think some of it does. I mean, some of it for farmers, and I'm sure there are people all over the world that get some help from this program, but it is also an intelligence front. It is a CIA slush fund. They do use it to foment instability all over the world where they can. They provably use it domestically to fund protests. They provably use it for all kinds of activities that are not necessarily in the best interest of the American public, but they're in the best interest of the CIA and the people that the CIA works for. That doesn't mean that everything that that agency does is bad, and that doesn't mean that there aren't people that depend on that agency who will suffer because it's completely closed down. It is tough to hear people that have watched Benjamin Netanyahu vaporize tens of thousands of Palestinian children who now come out and worry about children in other countries not getting help from the USAID program. That is what they call irony. I will say this. He's going to go into the Pentagon next. I mean, perhaps. They're saying that some of the next targets might be the Department of Defense and Education. The Pentagon, we know, has lost lots of money. USAID, that program, has lost a lot of money. There are billions of dollars that are unaccounted for. The Pentagon, you know, I mean, I remember back to the days of the Iraq War when the Pentagon had lost billions of dollars, trillions of dollars unaccounted for. This isn't something new. And this doesn't seem to be something that anybody wants to happen, which might be, it might not be that bad that it's happening. I think Musk is doing it in a very sloppy way. I think he's got a, you know, this band of 20-year-olds running around. I think the aesthetics of it make it seem like Trump isn't in control. And I think that makes Trump appear weak, which is not what he would want. And I think that there are going to be cuts that are sloppy, in the same way that when the Biden administration got everybody to administer these DEI programs, diversity, equity, and inclusion, they were done in a very sloppy way. This idea that we had to make sure that every company, every university, every athletics, franchise had diversity, equity, and inclusion officers in it to make sure that they were hitting certain quotas and that the messaging of these institutions didn't exclude any group of people, no matter how statistically insignificant that group was. It was done in a very sloppy way. This is not unlike that in the sense that this is not a methodical approach, but I don't know that you have the time to do a methodical approach. That would be their argument. Their argument would be, well, we don't have time to be methodical. We have billions of dollars unaccounted for. We have tons of fraud and corruption. And the fact that Elon Musk happens to be the wealthiest man in the world certainly does not help the aesthetics of what's going on. Because here's the way this is being presented. These are government bureaucrats who are doing good things. They're good people. They're lovely. They are just here to help. They're just here to help. That's all USAID is. That's all we're doing in other countries is helping. That's why they love us so much. I love, by the way, I'm reading these articles and they go, USAID is one of the reasons people like us in the world. Nobody likes us. Nobody. Go to any of these countries where they have USAID. Half the people believe it's a CIA front. The other half know it is, and they all hate us. None of them like it. The idea that people adore us, yes. Is there, have we provided aid to people that have been grateful? Sure. But in mass, in totality, the idea that we're winning all these friends and everybody, like, go travel the world, tell me how much we're loved. Go travel the world, tell me how much after we've overthrown governments, okay? Invaded countries, occupied them, tortured their residents, kidnapped them in the middle of the night, put them in secret underground torture prisons. How much U.S. aid has made up for that in the minds of people? I'm asking, go travel the world and ask a lot of these people, do they really love us, or is it full of, or are they full of shit? They don't love us, number one. I'm not saying USAID doesn't have good things. The Republicans are trying to restart the farm aid package for a lot of the farmers that need aid because eggs are $1 trillion because they had the Holocaust, a bunch of chickens. Because of the bird flu, they had to Benjamin Netanyahu, like 30,000 chickens, and now we all have to pay, it's $5 for eggs. I notice it now. I'm even noticing it. The rich. Not the Elon Musk rich, the working rich. But eggs are a lot of money now. So they're trying to restart, you know, because they had to get rid of all those chickens. We're off topic. The point is this. People think what's happening right now, and I'm not saying I'm for all of it either. I'm not saying I agree with every single thing Elon Musk is doing. I was heavily critical of the visa thing. I remain so. I do not trust tech people. I don't trust what their end game is. They are creepy and disturbing. And a lot of what they want to do, I do not agree with. So don't tell me, you know. But the idea that every cut being made is to a government bureaucrat who's just a good do-gooder who's trying to help other people isn't true. There are lots of people that work in our government who are incredibly corrupt and stealing money. This is a fact. They're working with members of the private sector doing this. That is completely 100% the truth. That doesn't mean that everyone is, but it does mean that if you take a magnifying glass to a lot of the programs in our government, they are useless. They do not benefit anybody, and they suck up a lot of tax dollars that could be going to help other people. All the people talking about USAID, The problem with a lot of this stuff, when you get on a moral high horse and you write articles in the Washington Post and the New York Times and the Atlantic about how valuable it is that the United States help people all over the world. And that's a understandable point of view, but it would be more understandable if any of these people were ever concerned about Detroit, Chicago, poverty in America, Virginia, upstate New York, parts of Pennsylvania, Florida. They do not concern themselves as much with domestic poverty, the inequality of wealth domestically. In fact, the only person who brought that up, Bernie Sanders, they all closed ranks to destroy. All of these establishment Democrats closed ranks to destroy Bernie Sanders and install Joe Biden when they knew he was crazy. And I know people in Chicago that were part of that effort. This is a fact. So all of these establishment Democrats who don't care at all about wealth inequality in America, they don't They don't care at all about deindustrialized areas where people are hopeless and they're on fentanyl. They spent the last 4 years telling all those people they had white privilege and basically to shut up. They're men. And they caused all the problems. And then a lot of them voted for Trump and then they were shocked. Why did they do that? So at the end of the day, you can have the position that America is a wealthy country and should go around the world helping people, but that's not what's going on. That's not all of what USAID is. It may not even be a majority of what USAID is. This is a slush fund that is being used for all kinds of reasons, but one of them is because the CIA and other agencies are using that money to go into these countries to foment the type of instability and chaos that causes America to intervene in that country, or it causes some type of coup where we can replace the leader of that country with somebody that is amenable to the interest of American multinational corporations. That's a lot of what is going on. It's not all of it. It's a lot of what's going on. Domestic protests, also partially funded by these NGOs, these nonprofits, this entire world of bullshit that exists that has never helped you or your family. It does not help people, a lot of it. USAID has faced accusations of inefficiency and waste over the years, including that it fails to measure the effectiveness of its programs. Much of USAID's money is handed out as grants or is subcontracted to aid groups and NGOs. Right. Critics contend that USAID's use of American contractors and its large bureaucracy means that not enough money actually ends up helping those in need. This is like a charity. This is like a lot of charities are fake. We know that. There are real charities. It's Venmo. It's like, it's helping people directly. Bethany does a great job. She hands cards and puts them in people's cash cards and gives them to people and goes, go buy what you need. Something Bethany Frankel does. And that is true. But a lot of charities, and I've spoken not only to her about it, but other people, a lot of charities, okay, are not transparent. And a lot of people don't get the help. They don't. This idea that all charities are just these entities that just seek to benefit people, a lot of charities get such a small percentage. I mean, a lot of the actual people get such a small percentage of what the charity takes in when you factor in overhead, operating expenses, the salaries of the staff. Now, you need some of that, and I understand it. That being said, sometimes it's 10%. If you donate to a charity, sometimes the people on the other end are literally getting 10% of the fucking money. It's insane. That's why I don't donate. I donate to myself because I get 100% of the money. Transparency is big with me. So if I donate to myself, I get all of the money. There is no overhead. Whereas if I'm donating, I don't know, to just, you know, World AIDS, sure. But where is it really? And I help people directly. I help people directly, as you should. Doesn't anyone have a Venmo in Africa that I can send the money to direct? I don't want to give it to a charity in Washington, D.C. Can I Zelle you? Can I overnight you something you need? I'm only half kidding. The charity scam. And then the government's involved? The government's involved in the charity and it's going to get better? It's going to be more transparent now that the government, now that the CIA is involved with the charity, it's going to be good. We know the CIA is full of charitable people. That's why they go into that line of work, because they can't stop giving. That's why Alan Dulles started that organization, because he couldn't stop giving. This is a guy, if you read his autobiography, who like watched his sister almost drown, emotionless, stood there on the thing of the lake, the side of the lake. The point is this. The idea that the United States government is running around the world just helping people is the craziest thing I've ever heard in my life. And I'm sorry to be, and again, this doesn't mean that I think Elon Musk is doing everything right. This just means that like we're going to have to get a little, we're going to have to sober up. I think there needs to be a Democratic Party and there needs to be an effective functioning Democratic Party and an effective functioning Republican Party. You don't want a one-party state. It would be lovely if there were lots of parties, but there are not. There's two. And if the Democrats don't drop the identity politics immediately, if they don't stop this righteous indignation, if they don't stop the pearl clutching, the culture has moved on in America. There's been a, you know, people are reasserting a type of traditional masculinity, again, that isn't focused around like we're going to, but, you know, it's not like we're going to kill everyone. And it's not this toxic masculinity in the fevered imaginations of some of my friends. Some of it, I'm sure, has elements of that. But a lot of it's like, hey, we want to watch sports and drink beer and be guys and not be told that we are the source of all evil on the planet. I think that's reasonable. I think that's reasonable. Okay? The last 4 years and the intensity with which these cultural, you know, conversations were happening, it was incredibly destabilizing for a lot of people. And they want to kind of go back to something that feels a little bit more traditional. Okay, that doesn't mean that you're throwing gay people off the roof. That doesn't mean that trans people shouldn't live normal, happy lives. It means that, you know, we need to take a beat, take a step back from, you know, we don't need to live in the 1950s, but we also don't need a thousand genders. We can't swallow that. The Democratic Party's got to cut this out. This is not helping anybody. You need to cut this. You need to stop doing it. I don't even know who this is for anymore. It's not. And I know that the right keeps calling them all pedophiles. There's nothing less sexual than the current state of the modern Democratic Party, by the way. None of this is even about sex. This is weird. It's like this bureaucratic office politics, call me the right name or I'll have you fired. All of this shit that was done for 4 years, you're now seeing again. And it's happening. It's just happening. The right has now come to power. And the right is doing the things they've always wanted to do, like shrink the government and eliminate bureaucrats. And it's everything I've heard since I'm a child. It doesn't mean it's a coup. It doesn't mean that we no longer live in a democracy. It's that the Republican Party's always wanted to shrink the government and get rid of waste. This is all that they've ever talked about, okay? Now, the same way that the Democratic Party tried to purge all of these institutions of anyone that didn't subscribe to their policy of racial justice and equity and gender theory and all this gobbledygook, and they ran around doing the same thing. And this is when a society starts to completely fall apart. When as soon as one side has power, all they try to do is purge anyone that doesn't subscribe to what they want. And this is deeply unhealthy. And this is how you get societies in the Middle East where you have Sunnis and Shiites and they just kill each other. The political process completely evaporates. It doesn't exist at all. You can't have discussions. You can't have debates. You do not vote. It is simply terrorism and war. That's what we want to avoid. We don't want that. So what we need to do is have a functioning Democratic Party that nominates a sane human being to lead the party. It cannot be children. It cannot be David Hogg. It cannot be a child. Not that they're children, but I don't want to hear from anyone in their 20s. I don't. I do not want to hear from anyone in their 20s. It doesn't help your case. when all of the people on social media that you're bringing forward are people in their 20s or sadly people in their 40s who are trying to ape the lingo of people in their 20s, which is even sadder. You have to kick and purge. You have to kick these people out. You have to purge them. You have to bring in rational people that go, you know, we need people to have health care. We need people to have retirement. We need to ease people's economic insecurity. We need to not divide people on the basis of race and gender and sexuality. What we need to do is build a coalition of people based on the idea that we all have similar interests regarding infrastructure, regarding the economy, regarding freedom, regarding abortion. A lot of people, you know, obviously are pro-choice. So it can be done. It's just not going to be done until they fully get rid of a lot of the garbage that they have. If you look at the cultural moments right now, music, and also the right, stop whining about Kendrick Lamar's show, you idiots. Stop. Stop being the pearl clutching and the offense. The addiction outrage machine is over. It's being shut down. It actually is already shut down. It's like an amusement park that you pass and you look at it to the left or to the right and you go, oh, it must have been fun. And it was. Being angry all the time made a lot of people happy and it made a lot of people money. But it's over. It's shut down. No one has the energy for it. You cannot stay angry for your entire life. It's unnatural. Just the way you can't stay happy your entire life. There are going to be days that suck and days that are great. Okay? So at the end of the day, you cannot fly into a rage over every single thing. And when the right is yelling and screaming about Kendrick Lamar for whatever reason, Serena Williams crip walking, or we don't like that he didn't do this, or we don't like that he... It just shows that even in victory, because they've won, the right has now won everything. Even in victory, the temptation to be a victim is so great, so monumental, and the right will have to fight this or they'll get destroyed in the midterms and they'll lose and, you know, they'll lose the next election. They also have to figure out how to lower the prices of things and get interest rates lower. It's another conversation for later in the show. But if they do not figure out a way to stop getting angry about not who cares, in the same way that people on the left that say Kendrick Lamar's show is the greatest thing that's ever been, he's showing that America, he's making a statement and he's showing projecting your political realities on art is over. That's over. That's 2022. The idea that the person that you enjoy watching, listening to, is some symbol of some greater thing you want to see happen is over. It's now embarrassing on both sides. It is a halftime show. It was forgotten. It was good. I enjoyed it. I think he's very talented. But what he did ultimately means nothing. It doesn't mean anything. You people have put all of this emphasis on art as a way to pull the levers of social change and a way to really, now art can do certain things. It can start conversations and whatever. But what it is not, and certainly should be obvious to all of you people now, you directed every cultural weapon you had for 4 years at Donald Trump and he's back in office. Enough. Stop it. You're not a resistance. Hollywood doesn't do a great job at resisting anything. I'm not saying it should blindly go along with things either, but you have to stop projecting all this stuff onto a halftime show. It's embarrassing. On both sides, the right's like, this is, Matt Gaetz goes, this is the response to Trump's historic gains with black men. No, it's a halftime show. It's a rapper performing at a halftime show. That's what it is. The whole Kendrick Lamar Drake beef, people have written all these long think pieces about what it's really about. what it really means, what the real significance is. If you look under the hood, peel the layers back, you're going to get, guys, it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing thinking about things this way. This is not politics. The thing you're doing is not, it's the opposite of it. You're retreating into this world that doesn't mean anything outside of X and a couple of dumb think pieces and a couple of YouTube documentaries. It's not meaningful, lasting change. It's not change at all. It's nothing. It's less than nothing. So what you have to do is you have to get over that shit and you have to stop. Otherwise, you're never going to be effective and you're never going to get any type of legitimacy back if you keep doing this. Now, friend of the program, Kanye West, speaking of the Super Bowl, and we only say friend of the program because he wasn't what he reached out to us a lot, but not a lot. I think once, but he has been going off the chain. And even he's, this is how crazy, even he's getting boring. Even this is boring. Yeah, you're a Nazi. We get it. It becomes boring after a while. He was saying very interesting things at one point, years and years ago, about love. And then it all got very Hitlerian, But he had he paid, and I think it was $8 million, something wild for a Super Bowl commercial.
It's actually less.
How much was it?
I don't know exactly, but it was...
I afford one? How much?
You probably could. He only paid to have it shown in the LA area.
Oh, interesting.
So it's a little cheaper.
Interesting. So only in the LA area, Kanye West... Because I was at a Super Bowl party in Santa Monica. It was fine. And it was nice. And I was there at... Lovely home. And I was there and just LA people. You know, it's just what it is. But they lack intensity. People in Los Angeles. So if you're watching a game on the East Coast, there's a lot of intensity and passion. And LA, everyone's kind of like, So it's just not fun to watch anything of any substance with any of these people because but they're very sweet and very nice. They ordered me coffee. I want a coffee. And they had a beautiful home. And I like it, actually, at this point in my life. I like it with no intensity and kind of boring people that will get me what I want and let me sit in their backyard that I can't afford. That's what I like. So it actually works perfectly for me. But a few people were like, what the fuck? Like there was a visceral reaction to something. And I go, what happened? And they were like, oh, Kanye West had a Super Bowl commercial. The ad ran on 3 Fox owned stations, including KTTV, Los Angeles, and may have been seen in a few more local markets. It's not the first time West had purchased a local spot during the Super Bowl, as one was seen on at least one small market CBS affiliate in 2024. I love the idea of buying a local Super Bowl commercial. Can we watch it?
Yeah.
Let's watch. This was Kanye. Now, this Yeezy.com, there was a link, and he was just selling a shirt with a swastika on it.
What's up, guys? I spent, all the money for the commercial on these new teeth. So once again, I had to shoot it on the iPhone. Go to Yeezy.com.
So now when you went to Yeezy.com, there was just a shirt. Can you show the shirt or are we going to get in trouble? Can we show it? There was a shirt and the shirt was a white shirt. And it had a swastika on it, which is, yeah. Oh, there's also some fun kind of, are those swastika socks as well? What is, oh no, is that different?
On the left is what his website looked like.
Yeah. And then on the right, it's that, yeah. Well, number one, the shirt itself, I hate white shirts because they stain and they're not good. And, the minute anything happens, a drip of coffee, the entire shirt's ruined. So that being said, that shirt, I think the only option I see is white. I don't love that. Obviously, the swastika is offensive to people and will get you in a lot of trouble. But as a shirt, it's rather unimaginative. And again, I just don't like white. And it's a t-shirt, and there are a lot of places that don't want you to go in a t-shirt, you know, some nicer restaurants and whatnot. Also, the swastika imagery on the front of the shirt, I think, is, you know, it's probably going to limit the types of people that you will meet out there. You know, I think a lot of people are just going to see that shirt and make a judgment about you. That's the thing about clothing. Some of it just sends a message. And I think that sends a message. Let's see, within an hour of the ad airing in Los Angeles and other markets, West had made the switch and users saw that just a $20 white t-shirt with a swastika on it. At that point, the on-air ad had already run and it was too late. I just can imagine like his conversation with the person designing the shirt. They're like, so that's all you want? He goes, yep. They're going, that's it. Yes. Do you want a gray? Do you want to do a gray? Do you want to do a camo? Do you want to do a black with a white swastika? Nope. White shirt, black swastika. Okay. Someone had to take that order. That's the way the world works. Someone had to go, okay. And nothing else. You're sure? You're sure about this? No other versions? Okay. No. I mean, hey, you're the boss. He's someone's boss. That's the thing about Kanye. As crazy as he is right now, as wild as he is, he's flying all over the place. He is someone's boss. Like someone, he has a call and you have to get on that call. Like there's a Zoom with him and you gotta get on, you gotta put your headphones and you're on the Zoom and he's talking and he's like, and we're doing swastika shirts for the Super Bowl commercial and you gotta write it down. You gotta go, doing the swastika. Okay. And you just want a white, and it's a white with a black swastika. Okay. And then we make that switch about an hour and okay. All right. Yeah. You don't want anything else. You're sure. Do you want to do a pant? Do you want to do like a, full sweatsuit with it? No. Okay. No hats. Okay. Well, we've also just found that there are some people that are willing to purchase a hat maybe because it's not as big of a commitment as a shirt. No. We'll just do the shirt. You're right. We'll do the shirt. So really what it comes down to, you have, he's doing the I Love Hitler stuff and telling people to whip your Jews. I mean, he's really just doing, he's out there wilding out. It's crazy. I don't know what, you know, I mean, listen. I said years ago, this was going to be the beginning of this trend where mega celebrities were going to have public meltdowns on social media. Because, and the reason that a lot of this is happening is because what used to prevent this was layers of people between a celebrity and their fans. Those people were managers, publicists, agents, lawyers, okay? Handlers, assistants, the Ray Donovan fixer character, right? Like all of these people were got between a celebrity and the public. Now, with the internet, there is nothing that stands between a celebrity and their fans, which can be a very big problem. That can be a very big, so no matter who wants to fly off the handle, they can do it now with such ease. And if you're an agent or a manager, a publicist, whatever, you just sit back in a constant state of anxiety. You just sit back, and all those jobs are evaporating anyway. Sorry to people that may be listening, but a lot of those jobs, not all of them, but a lot of them are. And what then happens is these people sit back and they watch their clients have these meltdowns and they can't do anything about it. It's already out there. So anytime one of these, like Bieber seems to be in a bad way right now. I think Justin Bieber is an incredibly talented kid who's probably been through a lot and I feel bad. But he's walking around now and he doesn't look great, right? He seems to be having a problem. Now he's not selling swastika shirts. I'm not saying he is. He's just walking around and he doesn't look. He seems like he's having an issue. You know, and it's difficult because the paparazzi just hound the poor guy. And he's out there and he's having mental issues. You know? And by the way, go up to these big clothes everyone's wearing now. Go up to this. Go up, just make that bigger. This doesn't, whatever this is, and I know this is the new fashion where everybody's wearing all these big things, Matrix-like, you know, but these very big coats and these big boots and these big, this is making people worry about you more. I'm not saying it should be form-fitting and skinny jeans or whatever, but this kind of strange, everybody's cloaked, doesn't seem great, but Bieber seems like he's having issues. It doesn't mean that he is. I don't know. I don't know him. I don't know people really that know him, but here, you know, because this, I'm telling you right now, this P. Diddy, I think, wasn't good for these people. That's what I think. This P. Diddy, it turns out, was like not great for them, for a lot of these younger people that P. Diddy took like an interest in and tried to mentor and stuff. P. Diddy, I think, was, you know, a net negative. That's the surmise that I have. So this poor guy is walking around trying to deal with all of this stuff. And he's, you know, so I'm hoping the kid's okay. He's been through a lot. He got famous very young and it's very, very difficult. Boston, Worcester City Council voted to become a transgender sanctuary city. I don't know what this means, but we'll watch this. Is there one transgender person that can publicly appear without a blue wig? Like there needs to be, and I'm sure there are. Everything can't be Halloween with this community all the time. It is not helping any case you're making. I'm being very honest here. There are gay people that are not always wearing assless chaps and stuff like that. Now, obviously, there are people wearing assless chaps, but usually that's like Saturday night. Like, if you show up to the town council or city hall or whatever, is there a way that you cannot dress, you know, like a cartoon? This doesn't help. I want to take you seriously, but showing up with a cartoonish blue wig and these wild eyebrows and the pearls, it doesn't lend itself to seriousness. But let's see, maybe I'm wrong.
I need the city to protect me because the federal government won't. And if you think you're afraid of Trump, you should see how afraid of Trump I am.
Can you wrap up, please?
Yes, I can. If you say that you're afraid of Trump and that's why you don't want the city to be a space, safe space for trans people, you better prepare for trans people to make this a very unsafe space.
I'm shaking right now. I don't want to be here.
Can you wrap up,
please? I'm sorry. Am I taking too long pleading for my life?
You remembered how many children I have and that two of them are trans.
I speak as both the B and the T in the LGBT.
I'm multiply disabled. I have Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, which is a connective tissue disorder that causes me immense physical pain.
Same. I told that to the woman at Nobu, and that's why I needed 8 o'clock. And she said, we don't have anything till 10. Continue.
I'm on the autism spectrum.
Same.
And I have narcolepsy, and I couldn't drive myself
all the time.
Here,
I'm on this phone all night, sister.
From my driver that...
Yes.
I was in drag, which is not an easy thing to do in drag.
I do not want to be here. It's right. My day off.
From what? From what is it your day off from?
Be in your DMs. I do not want to be in your email inboxes. I do not want my creativity writing diss tracks like Kendrick. I don't want to spend an hour applying glitter on my face.
Well, then don't.
So that you will hear and see me. I want you to listen to me.
Let us remember.
I love, by the way, I love this guy. There is no way this is every guy who's made me a sandwich in Staten Island. This is every single guy who's made my favorite sandwich, which is fried eggplant, fresh mozzarella. Do not heat the mozzarella. Heat the eggplant. It does need to be specified. Heat the fried eggplant, fresh mozzarella, roasted red peppers, and then a balsamic vinaigrette or an oil and vinegar is even better. You know, you don't need the vinaigrette. They emulsify them too much, whatever. But this, and maybe a little basil, this guy is every guy that has made me that sandwich and done it perfectly. If it is not this guy, I leave the deli because I go, oh, it won't be good. And it never is. This guy is every person who's made me a sandwich in Staten Island. So I'm just curious now, and again, not to, you know, whatever, but I'm curious as to, like, what exactly is this? Let's see what, and by the way, this person, the make, like, there needs to be someone in this community who shows up and speaks rationally. And I'm sure that there are. This looks like Cirque du Soleil. This cannot look like Cirque du Soleil. You have to have somebody who goes, I'm not for kicking trans people out of the military. I'm not for a lot of that. I think trans people should be able to do whatever they want, you know, with the exception of, like, you know, like teaching four-year-olds about being trans. I don't agree with that. Most of America doesn't, by the way. The Democratic Party has seemed to let this very infinitesimally, statistically insignificant, very small base of activists define the whole issue. It's psychotic. But can't one person show up to the city council without, you know, and I don't know what, also, are these people, am I supposed to believe that this group is dying to join the military? But let's speak of, let's see what this guy has to say. I'm curious.
Let us remember that the Nazis burned the books that the Nazis burned books on gender sciences first. Now the administration has villainized and marginalized migrant workers, trans, LGBT people, and even special needs, denying life-saving and affirming care.
Please, can you look at me and tell me how many of my friends need to die before you do anything?
Please wrap up.
Look at me!
Okay, we're all done here.
Fucking pathetic!
No, we're all done, come on.
Of course, we need to continue celebrating Black History Month because in spite of what's coming down from Washington, we all know that we all exist and we all need to be recognized for our existence.
But be aware that you are a guest in my house. When you come, and when you come, know that there are strong queer and trans people in my classroom who will collect you with the quickness.
My name in drag is Dee Dee Delight.
How many of these people, by the way, how many of these people just want attention? Like, and I mean, I'm being very serious here. Like, how many of these people woke up that day and were like, I just want something to do? Like, how many of these people, and I'm not saying there aren't legitimate concerns that trans people have. I get it. But the thing about me that, I've a lot of people in comedy always saw me as like this right-wing lunatic. Now I'm like really firmly kind of in the center because the culture's shifted and like I lean right on certain issues, but there are certain issues I'm more amenable to the left on. And what I've always warned my friends about on the left was that this extremism that they were kind of just silently nodding, going along with was going to come back to bite them because it would swing the other way. This is the definition of the pendulum swing. And all of my friends, when we'd sit down to dinner in LA, I would go, this is ridiculous and that's ridiculous. And they would all agree with me for the most part. I'd go, all this DEI stuff is stupid and the quotas are stupid. And this idea that, 50% of the nominated pictures need to have a women director. All of that stuff, no one ever agreed with. And they just silently kind of placated the most extreme psychopaths out there. And all of the people that were pushing this stuff were doing so to legitimize usually their own careers. A lot of the people that were pushing this stuff were going and blackmailing essentially executives and going, I will leak. I know stories where people were like, I will leak that this is a racist and homophobic work environment unless you give me a show. And those people got shows. I genuinely know that. I know for a fact that there were people calling up the LA Times and going, why don't you call and ask for comment on the story that no one was even writing about this being a hostile work environment, and then that person getting a show the next day, getting a sum of money the next day. It was fraud. It was extortion. And by the way, make your bag, whatever, but I know for a fact that what was happening in this town and many other towns was that people were going, if you don't give me this job with this budget and this, I'm going to say you're a racist, homophobe, transphobe, whatever collection of buzzwords I can use to get you fired, give me mine. And then all these museums and all these institutions and universities and corporations had these DEI officers. All of a sudden, there were these six-figure jobs for some of the most mediocre people in the world that were now existing in these companies and threatening and trying to terrify the board and the corporate structure and CEO. And the CEOs of these companies just said, just give them what they want. Give them what they want. Let them do what they want because they want to continue to operate a company without being slandered in the press. So all of that, which I had a first, which I knew this was happening, and I heard from people that if you spoke out, if you said anything, you were on the chopping block. You were going to get eliminated. All of my friends, when I would have dinner with them, and we would sit down and we would talk, or we would take a walk somewhere, and because a lot of people talk to me, a lot of people don't admit to listening to the show. But this show is listened to by some of the top people in all of these industries. And sometimes I would speak to these people and it would be off the record. And I would talk to these people and they would say, what is going on right now is fucking insane. And they would describe a meeting where like all of these, I know an executive. I'm not going to say where. Comedy Central. Comedy Central. I'll just say it was because that's where it was. Okay, and he offered an opinion on a lesbian, a white lesbian. He said, I just don't think she's funny. By the way, there's a lot of people who don't think I'm funny. They're allowed to not think that, okay? They're allowed to not think that. There's enough people that think I'm funny that I live a lovely life. Great. You don't? You don't like it. You don't like the show? Don't listen to the show. It doesn't really matter. It's just, you know, it is what it is. You're allowed to not like things, okay? I'm going to tell you a story now. That I may have told it. I don't even know. I might have told it. He said, he goes, this was at Comedy Central. And this was an executive at Comedy Central. And then a female comedian who was a lesbian, her name came up in the room and he didn't say anything damning. All he said was, I never found her that funny. Now, there's lots of lesbian female comedians, by the way. Some people like some of them and some people don't like others, just like there's a lot of gay male comedians. If you suggested a gay male comedian and my name came up, and I know this for a fact, a lot of people in those rooms in LA have had strokes, like actual strokes, and they had to be taken out. So it's fine. You're allowed to have opinions, right? This guy was court-martialed. After he said, she never did it for me. She never found me that funny. He didn't say, don't give her a deal. He didn't say, I think she's the worst thing ever. He said, it's not for me. Never thought it was that great. He was taken outside by several people, several executives. He brought into a room and told, you cannot, as a straight white man, offer that kind of opinion. He said, you hired me to give an opinion. I'm an executive at this, let's be honest, fake company, Comedy Central. And he goes, you hired me to give an opinion. It's literally my job to give an opinion when the name of a comedian comes up. And everybody went, well, you can't. You're a straight white guy. You have to understand you're in this position of power. He goes, right, but you hired me to be in that position of power. That's the thing. I'm the suit. I sit in the boardroom. I give the opinion. Is it right? Is it wrong? Who knows? But that's my literal job. And they said to him, well, you can't do it. You can't do that. And then he ended up leaving the company a few months later because he said, I cannot work in an environment where I cannot give an opinion freely on a comedian of color or a gay comedian or a trans comedian. I'm only allowed to critique straight white men. That seems crazy, right? And me. I think you're allowed to. I think all of those companies were like, you're not allowed. You're to say only negative things about straight white men and Tim Dillon. If you have a negative thing to say about a gay person, it's to be said about Tim Dillon, and that's it. But so this was going on all over the place. And this is what DEI was. People, they don't understand what it is. It doesn't mean every minority that has a job is DEI. It doesn't mean that everybody that's not white is incompetent. It's far from the truth. That's not true. And yes, is the right going overboard, criticize everything DEI? Sure. But what it was, and I just used that small example of a story that I personally was told, and I know that person, it's a real story. I use that example because that's what DEI was. What DEI was reordering all of these institutions and saying, you're not allowed to talk about this. You're not allowed to say that. You can only have an opinion on this. We have to have a quota, which includes this. So if you don't like something, you better start to like it because we're coming after your job if you do not fall in line. DEI could have also been called fall in line. That's what it was. So you had that created resentment. It created anger. It was basically a reordering of these institutions' priorities, and they were not concerned at all with quality. And they were not concerned with competence, chiefly. Those were not their chief concerns. Their chief concerns were how many people of X group are being represented in this thing. Okay? And I know that from my vantage point. I'm in the entertainment business. And even in the parts of the business I'm really not in, people talk to me. And they tell me. So what you did with that was create a very unsustainable, and people have talked about this before, unsustainable way to govern any institution because everybody starts fighting. Who's been more oppressed? Blacks, Jews, Jewish blacks, Muslims, Hispanics, the disabled, gay people, trans Muslim, Hispanic, disabled. Like, it becomes a war. And it's not sustainable. So whatever ethos you're using here to govern these institutions, Hollywood used to be a place, okay, that was run pretty much by sociopaths who took big risks where if a movie succeeded, their entire life was made. And if it failed, in many cases, their entire life was obliterated, okay? It was run by gamblers and risk takers, kind of the cowboy Western mentality. It then was turned over to these like collegiate, you know, pseudo-intellectual types that came out of universities in America that were indoctrinated into this belief system of using art as a tool for cultural change. Now that's always been going on to some degree, but over the last 4 years, it was really intense. And somewhat silly. And there is a pendulum swing now. There is a pushback. A lot of writers are out of work. A lot of people are suffering. A lot of people that were led into a writer's strike by psychopaths, in my opinion, who were demanding that some of the people in this town who had just had a job by sheer luck get paid more for it. You know, my friend who works at a company goes, I make my 100 and something grand. He goes, 120 grand. He goes, I don't speak up. They don't really know I'm there. I don't do too much work. I don't get on anyone's nerves. I'm not trying to get ahead. And I don't do too little work where I'm on the chopping block. He goes, I just float around. Most people probably don't even know I'm here. This is not an entertainment company. It's another company. There were a lot of people in this town that were kind of just getting by and making good money doing kind of bullshit. And then they tried to demand more and they got a little greedy. And I'm not saying some of them weren't abused, but a lot of them were getting greedy And now they have nothing. And that's unfortunate because people got a little greedy. And while they all sat there for a year, the internet continued to do what the internet does. It multiplies and multiplies and multiplies. Let's finish up here with Dee Dee.
Drag is Dewey Cosgrove Atienza.
Laddie LaRouge, he, they, in drag, District 3.
My legal name is Olivia D'Ambrosio. My public name is Livy Scanlon. My wife and I own a home in the Canal District.
I speak as someone who is always misgendered, like, all the time. People refer to me as sir when I prefer to be referred to as ma'am. I speak as someone who is afraid to use public toilets.
This is, by the way, and whatever this is, where a guy who's not even attempting to look like a woman is enraged that people are thinking he's a woman. Like, I don't know. I don't know what's happening anymore. But here's what I will say. I'm watching closely on the Musk stuff. I am. I'm not someone who's just going to support tech people no matter what. I don't know him well enough. I don't think he's Satan incarnate. I don't know. I'm very skeptical of the designs of some of these tech people. I am. And I don't know if that they're concerned about America. I've said that a million times. But I'm also, you know, withholding judgment here on the rollout of some of this stuff because I'm not in the camp of people that believe that all of this USAID stuff is used for good purpose. And by the way, go speak to people in these countries about some of this aid that we're giving them. And I'm not saying we're not giving them aid, but this idea that what we're just going around helping people, that's all we're doing is going around helping people. This is what Trump said he was going to do when he got elected. He said he was going to purge. Now, do people obviously want this more than they want cheap eggs? Probably not. And that might be reflected in the midterms. But this was what not only Trump, but every Republican wants to purge government of employees and shrink the government and eliminate federal spending in federal ways. This is actually what Republicans talked about years ago before the party became more of a big government party and it focused itself on cultural issues or it focused itself on war. Before it was about terrorism and war, the Republican Party was always about this stuff. It was always about, like, this agency's not and I don't think Musk is going to take Social Security and try to get rid of it. You know, again, the Democrats will win all of the seats, right? I think Trump has to be careful. I think he knows that. I think you see it in his face. I think he knows that. It's going to be interesting to watch this play out, you know, for sure. And I know there's probably good people out there that have lost money. And I know, is the cigarette smoking girl from Abu Ghraib still getting her pension? Get Lindy England up. If I find out, because this is where I draw the line, okay? Hit image. Get that picture up where she's leashed all those people. If I find out that Lindy England is not collecting a pension, I'm going to lose my mind. I am telling you right now, get her up. Is she still getting her pension? I'm telling you right now, I hope to God she's getting her pension. Cigarette smoking leash girl from Abu Ghraib. Because if these budget cuts are affecting her, I'm going to lose my mind. Cigarette smoking leash girl from Abu Ghraib. I'm telling you. I hope she's still doing good. I hope CIA contractor cigarette smoking leash girl, there she is still receiving her pension. That's my main concern. And it should be for all Americans. For all Americans, the main concern is she receiving her pension? Is she still on the government dole? Are people who kidnap people in the middle of the night still getting their money? I need to know that as an American citizen. TimDillonComedy.com for all your comedic needs. We'll see you on Patreon. We'll see you next week. We're in Canada. This will be out, but there might be some tickets left for Vancouver. We'll be in Edmonton Thursday. Is Vancouver Friday or Saturday? We're in Edmonton. The show's already passed. Can't do anything about that. And then there's some tickets probably on the late show in Vancouver. When is that? Saturday? Friday.
It's Friday.
Friday. Well, you missed that too. Calgary, there's some late show tickets at Calgary, and then Winnipeg, there's only a few left. But, you know, that's our little Canadian swing. And then I will be back here watching all of this stuff unfold with you as well, keeping an eye on these things. I don't know which way this is going to go. That seems... You know, it's interesting that Trump said about Vance, because he's not my successor. It remains to be seen whether Vance is my successor or not. And, you know, so what Trump is basically saying is I demand loyalty for the next 4 years. I will not. It's interesting to watch to see what Trump is basically saying there to Vance. He's basically saying, listen, we're not done yet. I don't know, you know, it's kind of I wouldn't call it quite a shot that he's firing at Vance, but it's interesting to say, listen, we just started, we've done some work here. I don't know if this guy's my successor or not. So this will all be very interesting to watch. And if the Democratic Party has any designs on retaking power, I would certainly try to get someone out there in front without a blue wig. Thank you.